First of all, I would like to thank the organizers for the opportunity to present my work. And thank all of you guys for sticking around to the last session of the day today. So I'm going to discuss two recent papers. One is already published. One is on archive that we recently put out. And it's about neural annealing and visualization of... Yes, it's about neural annealing and visualization of autoregressive neural networks. So initially I had on the Newman model, but I'm going to talk about the Newman model in the kind of the last part of the talk. Okay, typically for those of you who are familiar with it, when we think about annealing, we think about solving optimization problems. Okay, and optimization problems occur in different areas in science or industry. We have the so-called traveling salesman problem, which is the problem of finding the shortest path with a traveler going through a certain number of sitting walls. And as you scale the number of cities, the complexity of the problem increases and hard. Or you have other kinds of problem where you have, say, for example, particles that interact via some kind of potentials, right? And you are looking for configuration of your system that minimizes, let's say, the free energy. And different configurations or metastable configuration correspond to different local minima of a potential energy landscape, and the most stable configuration is the global minimum of that potential energy landscape. You have other problems like the so-called protein folding problem, which is a problem of finding the native state of a protein or the folded state of a protein coming from the unfolded state of a protein. And then the problem is that the process of going from the unfolded state to the folded state goes through a series of local minimum in the energy landscape of the conformation of the protein. Another problem that has nothing to do with either biology or chemistry of quantum physics is the so-called portfolio optimization problem, which is a problem in finance of finding the best way of investing into, let's say, the different stocks that you have in your portfolio, and many more. But so all of these optimization problems, there's a reason why I, as, let's say, physicist or a statistical physicist, I'm interested in them, is because they could be cast in a form that I'm mostly familiar with, which is the form of, let's say, an isinglass or a problem Hamiltonian, like a classical easing model. So the idea is that an optimization problem, all of these optimization problems could be cast, so they could be represented into, they could be formulated, uniquely formulated into the different interaction strength of the easing spins of your Hamiltonian, where sigma z here are basically Pauli matrices of your system. And here they basically could be represented by zero and ones. So the reason why I'm interested into them is because solving the optimization problem here is equivalent into finding the ground state of this problem Hamiltonian. And so we can basically leverage the techniques that we know in statistical physics or condensed matter to find ground state of classical Hamiltonians, all right? But there's a problem here is that for hard classical Hamiltonians, like for example, disorder is in glasses in random longitudinal field, finding the ground state among 2^n possible solution is an NP-hard problem. So typically, what people do is that they kind of relax the initial assumption of finding exactly the ground state, but to find an approximate state, an approximate solution. And when people think about finding approximate solutions, they usually think about using heuristic algorithms, right? So usually it is useful for us to think about the problem Hamiltonian or the optimization problem we are trying to solve as, like we said before, as an energy landscape, all right? For the hardest optimization problem, that energy landscape is Rook and it has exponentially large local minima. And then solving that optimization problem is finding the deepest valley in that optimization landscape. So one famous heuristic algorithm is the so-called simulated annealing algorithm. The idea of the simulated annealing algorithm is to devise a search, the search of the deepest minima or one of the close metastable minima by basically searching the landscape using thermally activated process. A little bit like if you imagine this landscape like, say, the Himalayas, and then I give you a car, for you to find, say, the deepest valley in the Himalayas, you have to go up and down the car. up and down the hills, and going up and down the hills is similarly to using some sort of thermal fluctuation or thermal energy to kind of overcome the barrier. So this idea of simulated annealing is based on a very old metallurgical technique whereby to make a material more durable, you heat it up at a very high temperature so that you give kinetic energy to the different atoms of that material. They can explore different kind of high energy states. And then you slowly cool it down so that the atoms themselves rearrange in conformation that minimizes their energy. All right, and this kind of strategy has been implemented on the different kind of dedicated hardware. Here I am just highlighting the one by Fujitsu. So another paradigm could be leveraging the laws of quantum physics, in this case, quantum tunneling, in searching through this landscape. So instead of using thermally activated processes, we could use, say, quantum tunneling, right? So to kind of, instead of like going through a barrier with thermal energy, you could tunnel through it. So now you could ask yourself the question, before asking yourself the question, this has also been implemented on dedicated hardware. But the question you could ask yourself is, which one is better? Is it better for you to search or to solve an optimization problem using thermally activated processes or using quantum tunneling? Up to now, it's not clear which one is the answer. Most of the problems that have been tackled have found quantum annealing more efficient than thermal annealing, but there's not a general consensus about that. But what I would like to point out, like some of those papers that I'm mentioning here, what I'm not saying is that most of those papers, what they actually do is that they simulate the annealing paradigm, either thermal annealing or classical annealing, using the so-called Monte Carlo methods. And when we talk about Monte Carlo methods, they are actually a zoo of Monte Carlo methods. To simulate classical equilibrium properties of classical systems or equilibrium properties of quantum systems. But what I would like to highlight by this slide is the fact that those methods initially, they were not used basically to simulate an annealing paradigm, either simulated annealing or classical annealing, but they were used to probe equilibrium properties of either classical or quantum systems. So we were inspired by these two papers, especially the seminal paper by Kalia Otfoya, where they actually use a trial neural network to simulate or to probe the property of quantum many-body systems, or the other paper of Lei Wang and Panzang, where they actually use Bayesian autoregressive neural network, or in general autoregressive neural network, to probe the behavior of classical systems. So we decided we asked ourselves the question, could we kind of repurpose those methods that were initially used to probe equilibrium properties of classical or quantum systems to simulate the annealing paradigm in the Bayesian framework? And hence the name variational annealing or variational classical or quantum annealing. So to explain the method of variational classical annealing, I will talk about the variational Monte Carlo method, which is kind of the bedrock of the variational quantum annealing method. So variational Monte Carlo, or VMC, is a quantum Monte Carlo method, one of the many quantum Monte Carlo methods, but it has one particularity that it is used to find good approximation of the ground state wave function of a quantum many-body system. All right, and the idea is simple. The idea is just basically if you have a given ansatz, you just have to minimize the expectation value of your quantum Hamiltonian over that variational state. Right, and basically the formula that you use is this one, where you replace basically quantum expectation value with this statistical expectation value. And one particularity of the variational Monte Carlo method is that it does not have the sign problem. But yeah, there are some intricacies into that I'm not going to talk about. So basically what you do is that once you have the parameters of whatever ansatz that you choose to represent the ground state wave function of your Hamiltonian, you can optimize that ansatz using this exact formula. Right, and then you can update the parameters of this ansatz using whatever flavor of optimizer you're thinking about. It could be stochastic gradient descent, momentum, stochastic reconfiguration, or Adam. But the catch of the variational Monte Carlo method is that the closest your approximation of the ground state is depends on the choice of the ansatz, right? So the closer your ansatz is to the ground, say the more the more accurate is your representation of your quantum system. So we ask ourselves the question, which ansatz should we choose? Typically in traditional condensed matter, people were inspired by the physics of the system to choose the ansatz, either correlation like the Jastrow wave function, or you are thinking about some sort of BCS state if you are, this is the kind of system you are probing, or mean field models. But we're thinking about having an ansatz that is generic enough, that has enough representability, and that can be systematically improved to represent the ground state of our quantum system. And we thought about using neural language models. So neural language models are powerful probabilistic models that are used to capture the different correlations that are between words in the language. And we basically use them more or less every day when we write emails. So the idea is that when you have a trained neural language model, it is able to predict what the next word is given previous words. So just to give you an example of one of the most vanilla neural language models, is called the recurrent neural network. So imagine that you are writing an email, all right, and then you have the name of the people you are writing the email to and say the subject of the email. So when you pass it through, let's say, a recurrent neural network, it is able to predict what is the, let's say, the first letter or the first word in your email. So effectively, what your neural network learns is the conditional probability of predicting the next word given the input that you have given. And with that word, you can predict the next word in your email and so on and so forth. So if you think about it, when you take the product of those conditional probability distributions, effectively you have learned the conditional probability of predicting the first sentence in your email giving the input. But now you can ask yourself the question, why do I care? I mean, why is it useful for quantum physics? Well, it's useful in case, say, instead of sampling, because what you're effectively doing here is that you're sampling sentences, but instead of sampling sentences, you want to sample a spin configuration. And you can basically use the very same way of sampling words, which has a name, either ancestral sampling or autoregressive sampling, to sample one spin at a time in this kind of autoregressive fashion, whereby here the H here is called the hidden state, and it's what kind of gives you an awareness of the correlations that you have between spins in your system. So this way of sampling is more effective than typical traditional Monte Carlo sampling, because here you are not building a Markov chain. And in case you want to sample spin configuration, let's say of a spin glass, where, I mean, the acceptance ratio is very hard to sample. With traditional Metropolis Monte Carlo, you have a long correlation time. But here, since you are sampling the spin exactly, there's basically no autocorrelation time. And the samples are directly parallelizable, and they can be sampled exactly. So another thing about this, this way of sampling spins with autoregressive neural network is that by construction, which I'm not showing here, but by construction, the probability distribution, or in the case you are thinking about a stochastic Hamiltonian, where we represent just a wave function with the square root of the probability or the joint probability distribution of our spin system that we've learned here, is directly normalized. And we see in a minute why this normalization property is useful. So here I'm just giving you a generic explanation of how you can use, powerful probabilistic models that, probably Google uses in Google Translate. Okay, here it's just vanilla RNN, but you could use transformers or what, okay.
In language, there is a natural one-dimensional sequence. Whereas in the spin problem, how do you choose the sequence of spins?
Okay, that's actually a very good question. So the way you will choose a sequence of spins, or let me say the accuracy with which you will do, you choose a sequence of spins will depend on the symmetry of your Hamiltonian. And I'm gonna show in the next slides how it unfolds.
Can I ask a question? So can I get also get the phase factor of the wave function, or do you have to assume it's real positive?
You can get the phase factor. So you could imagine, for example, out of your RNN, you can have one, say you can use a hidden state to generate either something that has the sense of a conditional probability distribution to sample the amplitude, or you can use another layer, say a source sign layer, that you can use to represent the phase of the wave function. So you can represent complex wave function as well with that. Okay. Maybe at the end I will show a slide on how that is done.
Great.
If we're saying that for a Markov chain, we're sequential in, for example, Markov time, and get this problem of autocorrelation in time, could you say that in this case, since we're sequential in space, one could say, we get instead an autocorrelation in space? Could that be an issue, or?
So here you capture the correlation that your spins have in your lattice, which you want to capture, basically.
So those are physical correlations.
Yeah, so those are the physical correlation in your spin chain or in your lattice. But with the Markov chain, the way you build the Markov chain, it needs to have the Markov property. It needs to be memoryless, right? And this is basically, where the autocorrelation grows. You need to propose a move and accept the move, and then probably you don't move because you're not really going down the energy landscape. And that's where the problem comes from. But here you literally capture, the whatever correlation you have in your physical lattice. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, so now I was talking generically about the kinds of, 25 minutes. I need to go fast. So I was talking generically about RNN cells, but like the question that was asked, you can actually have different kind of RNN architectures. So the most traditional one is the so-called vanilla RNN, where you have this kind of recurrence relation, but where your hidden state that kind of encodes the correlation between the spin of your system only talks to your local Hilbert space through the nonlinear activation function that you choose. But in our work, we generally chose this kind of what we call a tensorized RNN, where you have a tensor that directly interacts in a more compact way with the local hidden space. And we find that, for example, when we had a benchmark on the quantumizing chain criticality, we found that we are looking at the variance of the local energy. The more it goes to zero, the better it is. We saw that the tensorized RNN is more representative than the vanilla RNN. And when we look at systems that have randomness, let's say the random quantumizing chain at criticality, by choosing to have different weights and biases at different lattice sites, it gives us a way much more better way of representing or better accuracy of the RNN wave function compared to when we when we do weight sharing across the different sites of the lattice. And when we are looking at systems like the so-called Sheraton-Kilpatrick spin glass, where you have, it's like a graph of spins that interact all to all with random bonds, basically. And when we look at it at criticality, and we choose a different kind of architecture, the so-called directed RNN architecture. Actually, this architecture was used in the machine learning community to deal with the problem of vanishing gradient. But here we use it because we found that, as you can see with the variance of the free energy, that it is able to capture kind of the long-range correlation that you have in an all-to-all spin glass. So it seems somehow that the structure with which, or the way with which you do the autoregressive steps is seeing somehow the underlying symmetries or the underlying problem Hamiltonian or optimization problem you're looking at, all right? So next, I try to go a bit faster. So next, I will give you a snapshot of the variational quantum annealing algorithm. So I kind of introduce quantum annealing as a problem of finding basically the global minimum in a complex energy landscape, right? But you could view it in a different way, more in the context of adiabatic quantum computing. And the way you can see the variational quantum annealing is the following. So imagine that you have your RNN wave function of whatever autoregressive wave function you're thinking of. So you initialize it with, let's say, random weights and biases, all right? And the idea of quantum annealing is basically that of adiabatic quantum computing is that you want to interpolate or you want to find a solution of an optimization problem by interpolating between basic, is there a question? No. Okay, you want to interpolate between an Hamiltonian that is easy to prepare to an Hamiltonian that is hard to prepare. And that the Hamiltonian that is hard to prepare is basically the prime Hamiltonian, the optimization problem you are trying to solve, right? And so you need to prepare your Hamiltonian in that Hamiltonian that is easy to prepare. So for example, you can have a transverse field where all the spin point the x direction and that's easy to prepare. So with the RNN, you initialize it with random Wynn biases and then you just do gradient descent, so that you fall on the ground state energy of that Hamiltonian that is easy to prepare. And then what happens is that you introduce some sort of, you introduce your prime Hamiltonian. When you do that, you basically shoot out of the instantaneous ground state, right? And so you need to do some gradient descent step to fall back on the current ground state of the Hamiltonian that you have modified. And so you kind of time evolve your Hamiltonian. You shoot out a little bit from the instantaneous ground state and you perform some gradient descent step. And so on and so forth. When you have removed all the quantum fluctuations in your Hamiltonian, hopefully you find yourself in the ground state of the prime Hamiltonian or the optimization problem you are trying to solve. So we came up with a theorem that tells you what is the number of gradient descent steps that you need to take to remain adiabatic or to remain on the instantaneous ground state energy, and this number of steps is bounded by the inverse gap, minimum gap, and the inverse minimum gap squared during annealing with some assumptions I'm not talking about here. Can answer if there are questions later on. So we did some proof of principle on the quantum easing chain to check that indeed we can mimic the quantum annealing behavior with a neural network. And so basically the results are the following. So this is, we are probing this quantity, which is the expectation value of the instantaneous Hamiltonian over the instantaneous RNN, right? And what we are doing here with the green curve, we are doing transfer learning. That is at each annealing step, we use as input the parameters that we have learned in the previous annealing step. So when we don't do that, so when at every annealing step we reinitialize the parameters, we basically shoot out of the instantaneous ground state. We are no longer adiabatic, right? So on the right figure, we are probing this E residual, which is basically the difference between the energy that you get with exact diagonalization and the one that we get with Vaishan Monte Carlo. And we can see that indeed we are always above, as expected, the gap during annealing, the minimum gap during annealing. So this tells us that indeed the annealing dynamics are very well captured with the neural network. So next I will tell you about the classical formulation of Vaishan annealing, or what we call Vaishan classical annealing. So I told you that the bedrock of simulating annealing with, or quantum annealing with neural networks is Vaishan Monte Carlo, but there's a similarity with simulating classical annealing with neural networks using the variational free energy. The formulation is very similar. So instead of having a variational energy, you can have a variational free energy. Basically, where you just take the expectation value of the prime Hamiltonian or the Ising glass you're trying to solve over a probability distribution that kind of, that is your RNN, but that is supposed to encode the Boltzmann probability distribution at a given temperature and with some sort of classical or von Neumann entropy. And in practice, you just sample this local free energy and you estimate it this way. So the similarity that the classical formulation has with the quantum formulation is that the variational free energy is also an upper bound to the true free energy. So you can literally minimize it during annealing as you're changing the temperature. All right. So in practice, so one of the reasons why we are using, again, an autoregressive model is that we need to estimate this von Neumann entropy. So if we are taking an arbitrary probability distribution or an arbitrary answer that is not necessarily normalized to represent the von Neumann entropy, you wouldn't have been able to practically, as the system size increases, estimate the value of the von Neumann entropy. So this is kind of one of the reasons why we decided to choose autoregressive neural networks here. And here we literally tune the temperature to encode the thermal annealing dynamics. So we also had kind of a proof of principle on the classical Ising glass with here TensorRT iron and cell, and then you can see that indeed we can exactly capture when you use transfer learning of parameters, you can exactly simulate the thermal annealing dynamics using neural networks. I just mentioned that this kind of technique was used in this reference to avoid most collapse in simulating the equilibrium properties of classical system, but we are using it to solve optimization problems. So to recap, so the variational annealing algorithm is the following. It's the same idea as just the generic annealing method. You have, you initialize your temperature at a very high temperature or a very high value of the transverse field, and then you want to train your system to equilibrate at that value of temperature or transverse field via some gradient descent step. And then you start performing annealing by reducing the temperature or the transverse field using some user-defined schedule and using transfer learning of parameters in between the annealing steps. And when you repeat step one and step two, you repeat step one and step two until either all the thermal fluctuations or all the quantum fluctuations are reduced in your simulations. And at the end of the simulation, hopefully you find the solution of your optimization problem. And another advantage of using an autoregressive neural network is that you can arbitrarily sample, you can sample an arbitrary number of configuration of your optimization problem once it is trained. Yes. Transfer learning of parameters is between two annealing steps, between two updates of temperature, you use the parameters that you've learned in the previous temperature as an input to learn the parameters of the new temperature. So when you look, for example, at this orange curve, when we don't do transfer learning, that is, every time you update temperature, we reinitialize randomly the parameters of your neural network. You basically shoot out, in this case, of the instantaneous Boltzmann probability distribution. So that's why we found that transfer learning is important here. Thanks for the question. So I present some results. Here is some results on the 2D Edward Anderson spin glass, which is just a 2D lattice model interacting via some random interaction strength. So we look at a model on the 10 times 10 spin system. So the metric that we are looking at is the so-called residual energy, which is the difference between the energy we get at the end of the annealing minus the true energy which we can get for this easing glass. This one is not NP-hard, all right? And we take expectation values over a million samples. So we train the neural network. We do annealing with like 50 samples. At the end of the annealing, we can generate like a million samples. And then we do again disorder averages over like let's say 25 different realization of disorder here. So the curves I would like to highlight is the first of all the blue curve, which is the variational classical annealing curve. So this what one of the things that was kind of surprising to us is the fact that VCA was superior to VQA. That is, the blue curve was superior to the green curve here. And in a minute, I will tell you why it was a little bit surprising to us. So we tried to improve the result of VQA by adding a fake entropic term. So we actually added the entropic term that we are using for VCA. But it's not truly a quantum entropic term because we are not using a density matrix to represent the von Neumann probability distribution. But indeed, we saw that by removing somehow entropy in the system, it helped a little bit the quantum annealing part, but was still inferior compared to variational classical annealing. Next, we wanted to check that the annealing paradigm was actually at work here in solving the optimization problem. So what we did is that we directly optimized the problem Hamiltonian over the ANSAT or over the RNN. And this is the red curve that we have here. So the red curve depends on n step, which is just, which is just the number of gradient descent steps that we take into optimizing the ANSAT. And you see that indeed optimizing the ANSAT is helpful because it reduces in terms of the residual energy, but it's still very far, like orders of magnitude inferior than what we get with annealing. So this gets stuck a lot into metastable minima of the potential energy landscape of the easing glass. So this tells us that the annealing paradigm is indeed more efficient than just mere direct optimization of your problem Hamiltonian. So next we check, yes.
not entirely clear to me why the classical algorithm is more efficient, because in a way you have to, in the classical algorithm, you need to give it a large energy to overcome the barrier, whereas quantum mechanically you are just flipping a spin and remaining at the same energy and, you know, crossing a barrier. So it's not entirely clear why that did so well.
I mean, this is a very good question, because so what you just explained is more of an implementation of simulated annealing in a Monte Carlo fashion. Okay, so in a Monte Carlo fashion, there were results by this paper too showing that simulated annealing with this red curve was inferior to simulated quantum annealing somehow. But so for us, the way we do sampling is different than just flipping a spin, right? Because with the autoregressive sampling, you can literally, so if in principle, if you have a generate ground state and you are able to capture all the modes of the distribution of your Boltzmann probability distribution, you can sample all of the degenerate ground state in principle of your algorithm. It's not just flipping and then overcoming your barrier or just doing quantum tunneling here. Okay. So here we are showing results on the 40 times 40 spins. And here we are comparing two different ways of implementing the annealing paradigm. So simulated annealing and simulated quantum annealing are methods where you implement classical annealing using Metropolis Monte Carlo. And for the simulated quantum annealing, you implement quantum annealing using path theorem Monte Carlo. Okay? And here we see that when the number of annealing steps is small, is low, which is you are doing kind of a quenching somehow, the Metropolis implementation is a little bit superior to using variational classical annealing. But when the number of annealing steps increases, we see that we can have up to three order of magnitudes more accuracy in solving the optimization problem by using the neural network version of implementing the annealing. So next, we benchmark on a different model, the Sherrington-Kilpatrick model. And here again, we see that variational classical annealing is superior to both simulated annealing and simulated quantum annealing. So it seems to allude to the fact that the autoregressive sampling here and the fact that we are kind of removing entropy, like from the free energy or from the cost function, gives an advantage compared to having just a mere Metropolis Monte Carlo implementation of simulated annealing. And again, we kind of benchmark the different solutions that we obtain. So here we did an histogram of the solutions we obtained at the last annealing steps. And you see that basically for VCA, very few times you get stuck in a metastable solution, whereas for VCA, for simulated annealing and simulated quantum annealing, most of the time you get stuck. And when we look at basically the probability of success, looking at difference realization of the Sherrington-Kilpatrick, we see that basically when VCA finds a solution, it kind of finds it with probability one, whereas it's not the case for either simulated quantum annealing or simulated annealing. Another important thing that we also check is, so at the end of the annealing, we sample like a million samples, and we did a PCA, principal component analysis of those samples, and we look at basically the Hamming distance between the samples that we obtain at the end of the annealing and the true ground state, and we see that we can basically sample the two ground state of the Sherrington-Kilpatrick model, which means that we can capture the mode of the distribution of the solution at the end of the annealing, which if you were using Metropolis Monte Carlo, I mean, you would have had a very huge barrier to overcome to be able to sample those two spin configurations. But we had kind of a setback by looking at another model, which is kind of an easing glasses called the Richard Plantet Ensemble. The idea of this model is that when we look at the Sherrington-Kilpatrick model, I mean, there's kind of a catch here. I'm showing solution of the residual energy, which means that I know what the solution is. But in practice, I mean, we had to send a lot of instances on the spin glass server, some were coming out, others, the server could not solve it, right? So the idea is that for real optimization problem, you don't know what the answer is. So people have been thinking about benchmarking I mean, different kind of heuristic algorithms using planted solution. That is, I know the solution and I can plant it. A little bit like what you could think about Hopfield model, where you kind of have your patterns in a Hopfield model and you want to retrieve it. So with this planted solution, the particularity of this is that it has a first order phase transition. And this and the first order phase transition could be tuned with this parameter alpha. And the smallest the alpha is, the stronger the first order phase transition is. So here we see that for alpha equals to 0.5, VCA at the very large annealing time can be order of magnitude superior to simulated annealing and simulated quantum annealing. But when it goes the phase transition becomes harder, even VCA start to suffer in finding the solution. So we are inspired by this by looking at another model called the Newman-Moore model, which is basically a model of spins interacting on the plaquettes and via this interaction strength. So what is interesting is that even though those spins do not have a disorder term here, the Newman-Moore model exhibits glassy dynamics, right? And when you add a transverse field here, it actually has a quantum phase transition, which some simulations have shown that it seems to be first-order quantum phase transition. And another interesting feature of the Newman-Moore model is that it has degenerate ground state. So people have been thinking about using the degenerate ground state of this model, say, for example, for quantum or classical memories. So we implemented the VCA algorithm here and the variational quantum algorithm here to see whether we could solve this optimization problem. So already for very small system sizes, 3x3, we see that the simulation was not stable, basically. I mean, here, when we compare it to the analytical result, we see that most of the time, basically, the free energy does not remain as expected on the instantaneous free energy. And in a minute, I will give some ideas why this occurs. But an interesting thing that we noted here is that we were able to capture, so for this model, the ground state has four degenerate states. So at the end of the annealing, when we look at the principal component analysis of the samples, we are able to capture, the four different ground states. And when we look at the probability distribution of those four ground states, they are kind of equally probable. So it means that the RNN was somehow, for this case, able to capture the multimodal distribution of the ground state. But there's a catch, it was not always able to capture it. And why? When we increase the system size, it's even clearer that, the simulations become way, way much unstable, right? There's a very strong mode collapse in the sense that most of the time, the solutions at t equals to zero, the variational classical annealing does find the solution, but only the unique trivial ground state, the one with all spin pointing down, and it does not find the other ones. And we try to understand why were the simulations so unstable? And we're inspired by this paper in the machine learning community called Visualizing the Lost Landscape of Neural Nets. So they observed that for a specific kind of neural network, which is called ResNet, when they were using what they call skip connections, the lost landscape that they were using to train the neural network was becoming way much more smooth with a minimum that generalized better. But when they were not using skip connections, the landscape was totally chaotic. So we decided to kind of visualize what is the lost landscape of the variational classical annealing during the annealing simulations. And the results were interesting. So first of all, when we start the variational classical annealing algorithm, we want to, before one warm-up, we see that we saw that the variational lost landscape had a characteristic minimum around the current parameters, which you somehow expect. All right, but as we kind of decrease the temperature, we see that the shape of the landscape becomes more and more chaotic with flat regions, which means that probably you are not training. And then when we go towards zero, you see that the characteristics minimum, which you expect if you are remaining instantaneous, you represent the instantaneous probability distribution of the Boltzmann distribution at that temperature, basically vanishes. You don't see any minimum anymore, right? And you have like completely chaotic loss landscape, which we expect is probably what we are seeing, which is the cause of the instabilities here. So it seems to allude that the difficulty that a traditional metropolis or a traditional Monte Carlo method will have in finding the solution of the Newman-Moore model in the configurational landscape kind of translates for us in the difficulty to train the model using neural network in the in the parameter landscapes. All right. With that, I bring conclusions. So we've seen that annealing search in the variational landscape seems to outperform the search in the configurational landscape. We've seen that VCA is more efficient than the quantum formulation and is somehow more efficient than the simulated annealing and the simulated quantum annealing metropolis formulation. And we advocate that it should be a good algorithm to solve reward problems. And we've seen that there seems to be a rigorous relationship between the architecture of the RNN and the underlying Hamiltonian that we are trying to probe. And trainability issues seems to allude that there's somehow, I mean, there's no free lunch. There seems to have a conservation of computational complexity in solving the ground state or in finding the ground state in the configurational space solving the ground state in the lost landscape. And we kind of think that using the tool of visualizing the landscape might help design better answers. For example, in case that we want to encode symmetries, we've seen some problems that encoding symmetries can help make the simulation better. Maybe that will be visible as well on the lost landscape setting. With that, I thank my collaborators, and I'll be happy to take questions.
At the end, you say visualizing landscape help. Now, yeah, if you look at Sherrington-Kirkpatrick model, there is this famous Parisese landscape with ultrametric structure, a hierarchical organization of ground states. So, have you used that insight?
No, we have not used that insight.
Because since you mentioned that, you know, having some idea about the landscape helps. So that was precisely Parisi's solution of at least the Sherrington-Kirkpatrick model. He found out an ultrametric organization of the ground state. So there are ground states which are well separated. To reach them, you have to climb many hierarchical trees and come down. There are ground states which are nearby. Anyway, we can discuss it.
Yeah, we can discuss about that, but the way we do the sampling, we are not, with using the autoregressive sampling, in principle, if your lost landscape has minima at the same energy, but that are separated by barriers, if you do Monte Carlo, you indeed need to climb. But if you do autoregressive sampling, in principle, if the modes are well captured, you don't need to climb. You should be able to sample them exactly.